Radio show of the Building and Realty Institute of Westchester and the Mid-Hudson Region, which is also known as the BRI, as well as the Builders Institute. I am Jeff Hanley, Associate Executive Director of the Building and Realty Institute, and your program host. We thank you for joining us this morning on 1460 AM WVOX, as well as worldwide on WVOX.com. We are coming to you live from the WVOX studios in New Rochelle. And again, many thanks for joining us. For first-time listeners, we will explain what the Building and Realty Institute is. Our association is a building, realty, and construction industry membership organization. The BRI is composed of more than 1,800 members in 14 counties of New York State. We are truly a statewide business organization. Those members are involved in virtually every sector of the building, realty, and construction industries. The BRI represents our members and the building, realty, and construction sectors on a 24/7 basis. If you are involved in the building, realty, or construction industries, we are most definitely the membership organization for you and for your business. And throughout 2021, we are marking the 75th anniversary of the formation of the Building and Realty Institute. Our association was formed on February 11th, 1946, and we will be citing that anniversary throughout 2021. That is a milestone that we are very, very proud of. As I mentioned, we are live, so please feel free to call us at 914-636-0110 with any questions or comments that you may have on today's show. That number again is 914-636-0110. We would be happy to hear from you on this Friday morning. Our show this morning will issue an update on the lawsuit of the Building and Realty Institute, its Apartment Owners Advisory Council, and several multifamily property owners that cites New York State's Housing Stability and Tenant Protection Act, also known as the HSTPA, as unconstitutional. On June 14, 2019, New York State adopted the HSTPA, which is an amendment to the Rent Stabilization Program known as the Emergency Tenant Protection Act, also known as the ETPA. The consequences of the HSTPA were, at the time of its enactment, anticipated by building and realty industry officials to be detrimental to the multifamily housing industry, and that is exactly what has happened. Soon after its enactment, the Building and Realty Institute, its Apartment Owners Advisory Council, and several Westchester property owners who are affected by the HSTPA filed a lawsuit that is seeking to void the legislation. The suit, which was filed in the United States District Court in White Plains, names the state of New York and Ruth Ann Visnauskas, the commissioner of the New York Homes and Community Renewal Agency, as defendants. The Building and Realty Institute, its Apartment Owners Advisory Council, and the owner plaintiffs are represented in the lawsuit by the White Plains law firm of Finger and Finger, a professional corporation which is chief counsel to the Building and Realty Institute and its seven component associations. The lawsuit challenges the constitutionality of the Housing Stability and Tenant Protection Act and its effects on owners who are responsible for approximately 25,000 rent-regulated apartments in Westchester County. With us this morning to provide an update on this important lawsuit is Dorothy Finger, a partner with Finger and Finger, a professional corporation. Dorothy has been a guest on our show in the past, and we are very happy to have her with us this morning. Dorothy, welcome back to Building Knowledge with the Building and Realty Institute here on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. How are you this morning?
I'm fine, and thank you for that introduction, Jeff. A pleasure to be here.
D- Dorothy, it's a pleasure to have you, and we thank you once again for joining us on this very, very important topic. First off, please provide us with a brief overview of Finger and Finger and the services that the firm provides.
Okay, so Finger and Finger is Kenneth Finger, who started the firm, myself, Dorothy Finger, his wife for many years, and our two sons, Carl Finger and Daniel Finger. As the firm has grown and the clients have grown, it's great to have, you know, four people at the helm. And basically, we provide law services in contracts, litigation of all kinds, landlord-tenant proceedings, pretty much a general law firm. We represent about 40 co-ops and condos, and we're the transfer agent for a number of them. So we get involved in a lot of issues related to the building industry, and of course, we're honored to be representing the BRI, which across the board has presented numerous issues, whether to be litigated or just to also lobby. We've been involved with the BRI in lobbying the state for some changes in this HSTPA, and which have occurred, which we'll talk about, and other legislation that is significant to builders and landlords.
Thank you, Dorothy. Again, thank you for joining us. We have a significant amount of material to cover, so we will get right to it. Dorothy, the lawsuit of the Building and Realty Institute, its Apartment Owners Advisory Council, and local property owners stresses that the HSTPA violates the United States and New York State constitutions. Please explain why.
Okay, well, constitutional law is probably one of the most complicated and most difficult aspects of the law to comprehend and to litigate. In this particular case, we have alleged a number of breaches. Now, it's a complicated issue as to whether there is a breach in terms of taking. And that is really the crux of what we're dealing with. There are procedural due process arguments, but they don't apply so much in this case. We're not dealing with somebody didn't get a right to do something in court. We're dealing with what's called substantive due process, which means that there's a violation of something in the Constitution. And one of the things that we're alleging and have alleged is that it's a taking if a regulation goes too far. And normally, that is a problem, and it is a problem in this case, to demonstrate that the regulations that they've put in have gone too far. They are a taking. And then the issue becomes whether there's a physical taking. You know, it's obvious if somebody in the state just comes in and takes property by some legislation without the proper due process. But this is a little bit tricky because it's not an actual encroachment on property. It's the regulations themselves. So those are the basic thought processes or issues that we've been dealing with.
Dorothy, building and realty industry officials have said for the past 2 years that the Housing Stability and Tenant Protection Act denies landlords their investment-backed expectations and returns. Please explain.
Okay, well, that's probably, in some ways, the easiest part of the argument, whether it flies or not, because, for example, it limits apartment increases for renovation work on an apartment to $15,000 for total expenditure over 15 years for no more than three renovations and must be removed after 30 years together with any other rent guideline increases. It's a major capital improvement increases are limited now to 2% and must be eliminated after 30 years with the rent guidelines. There will be many fewer major capital improvement increases because it's not going to be paid back. So it's a very, that is one. There are also limitations on it eliminates vacancy increases. There are limitations on owner occupancy. So that there are a number of things. It eliminates high rent decontrol and high income decontrol. So those folks that are making $200,000 a year and have, you know, not had the benefit because of prior legislation of controls, now, you know, now they've got it. So a lot of the tenants' rights have been asserted without any attention to what's happening to the builders and the landlords.
Dorothy, the Building and Realty Institute lawsuit cites that although a 5% vacancy rate in a community is required for the establishment of the Emergency Tenant Protection Act in a municipality and consequently the Housing Stability and Tenant Protection Act, there has not been a survey by any of the 21 Westchester communities that adopted the Emergency Tenant Protection Act since those municipalities opted to participate in the program. Please explain the significance of that fact.
Okay, so that is a very critical issue. That has been a requirement to do these surveys, because if, in fact, you don't have a problem, right, if you don't have a survey that shows this shortage of housing, then you don't really have a rational basis for the legislation. And they just haven't, they just didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we know that it's not the case in many of the communities in Westchester, particularly, and in many other communities. So they just did it without doing their homework. They paid tribute to the pressure of the tenant lobbies and went ahead and enacted legislation without doing their due diligence. So that is one of our arguments.
So as the lawsuit stresses, if there is no housing emergency in Westchester County, there really is no compelling state interest for the adoption of the Housing Stability and Tenant Protection Act. What are your thoughts on that?
Correct. That's the basis of that argument in our papers, is that this has just been done, and nobody did the underlying research, homework, whatever is supposed to be done. You know, normally when you see legislation at the state level, you know, they have a committee, and then they do hearings on, you know, certain facts, and it's fact-based. This wasn't fact-based before they drafted the legislation. This was just based on constituent pressure.
We've touched on this already, but it's so important, I feel we should touch on it again. The lawsuit cites the continuing restrictions that landlords are under as a result of the Housing Stability and Tenant Protection Act. Can you touch on those restrictions once more, please?
Well, for example, I said things that had to do with owner occupancy. And it's interesting that you're asking that question, because last year, the Court of Appeals in New York did overturn a certain provision of the HSTPA, which said that where there was the owner occupancy amendments, which require that you have to find another apartment for the person and you have to pay them, and you have to show your need, all of these things, that provision on owner occupation was also made retroactive, where cases of a landlord who wanted the apartment had already been applied, and they overturned that retroactive application. Still going on the regular going forward, but at least there was some relief for those people who were in the pipeline already. And as I said, they just willy-nilly passed this. Now, there's another case. That's the Regina Metro case. And there's another case, the Harris against Israel case, that had to do with penalties for landlords that had not filed. Well, Harris was the owner occupancy one. But Regina also had to do with that. So now there are questions about these issues of rent overcharge provisions. So whether or not, and they did, it's pending now, this issue about landlords who had liability for past conduct and how far back they can go to punish the landlord for not having filed certain documents and things like that. So these are still issues in the hopper. It's also a question about what will happen to the cap on MCI increases, especially where the applications were filed prior to June 14, 2019, but had not yet been determined. So which is it going to be determined on, the HSTPA or the old ETPA? So the court in that Regina case was pretty strong, and hopefully maybe it will be expanded. They said that, there's no indication that the legislature considered this harsh and destabilizing effect on petitioners' settled expectations, much less had a rational justification for that result. And although that language applies to, you know, specifically these challenges, it's interesting because that's really, this rational justification goes throughout the pending federal lawsuit as well.
And Dorothy, since landlords cannot conduct maintenance and improvement processes to their multifamily buildings due to the negative financial constraints put upon them by the Housing Stability Tenant Protection Act, a very, very serious economic situation has arisen. Can you please review that situation?
But you mean the consequences of this?
Yeah. What really has happened is, since owners are not able to do the improvements and maintenance processes due to the negative economic constraints put upon them, contractors are losing job opportunities. Hundreds and hundreds of contractors have told the Building and Realty Institute that the job opportunities in our county have significantly decreased. I'm very sure you've heard the same thing, correct?
Well, it's a two-pronged thing. One is the contractors are not getting the work. The other thing is that the landlords can't afford to do this work under this legislation. They're not going to recoup the expenses. They're, if somebody moves out and they do it, they're not going to be able to go to, if they had been giving a preferential rent, they're not going to be able to raise it back to what the rent should be. So they're losing on all fronts. So what they're doing is, many of them, and when it came out, they showed landlords in buildings saying, you know what, I'm not renovating it and I'm not renting it. It doesn't pay me.
Right.
So it has a counter effect. They want to increase affordable housing, they're decreasing it.
And yes,
it's a no-win situation for anybody. It's really not a win for the tenants either, because there's going to be less affordable housing. The work that should be done to upgrade is not going to be done. So they'll live in apartments that are not really the way they should be, and where landlords would be willing to lay out, make an initial investment, hire the contractors. But it's not happening right now. And this is the worst time for it not to happen. Now we have the pandemic, so on top of everything else, there's a bigger shortage.
To further illustrate the point about the loss of contractor job opportunities, Jay Martin of the Community Housing Improvement Program of New York City has told the Building and Realty Institute that the job losses, the contractor job losses in the New York metropolitan region, are estimated to be well over 10,000 over the past 2 years. That is a stunning number. And that, in turn, has hurt our economy. There's no question about it. By the way, this topic that we are discussing this morning will be the topic of the Thursday, June 24th, general membership meeting of the Building and Realty Institute beginning at 5:30 p.m. It is a virtual meeting. Kenneth Finger and Carl Finger of Finger and Finger, a professional corporation, will be addressing the membership of the Building and Realty Institute and its Apartment Owners Advisory Council on this issue. Please call 914-273-0730 or email us at info@buildersinstitute.org if you would like to participate in that virtual meeting. Another program note, the Building and Realty Institute will be resuming its in-person membership meetings beginning in September. Our first membership meeting is scheduled for September 23rd. Watch our website, buildersinstitute.org, for details. So we will be back with all those wonderful networking opportunities for members of the building, realty, and construction industries beginning in September. My goodness, it's 11:55. I cannot believe how quickly this program has gone, Dorothy. We could have probably done an hour easily, correct?
Correct. Can I add one quick thing?
Of course, of course.
It is of note that due to great part to the lobbying efforts of the BRI and the apartment owners and the whole group, the legislation, it was amended so that as far as co-ops and condos are concerned, the move-in, move-out charges and things like that have been lifted. So because they were treated like regular apartment owners.
Right.
And so those features that were really holding them back in terms of allowing people to move in to buildings and take a deposit, or even to put some money in escrow if they were like on the line of being accepted. But sometimes the co-op would say if you put 3-4 months of maintenance in escrow, you know, we'll go ahead with the sale. And they couldn't do that, so they were just not allowing some sales a lot of times. So now the legislature has fixed that. But it's just a very small piece.
So now co-ops are exempt from Part M of the Housing Stability and Tenant Protection Act, the situation you just so beautifully described. Very important, no question about it. Okay, 11:56, we have about 3 minutes remaining. Dorothy, what is the latest update on the lawsuit in terms of time? What's going on in that area, please?
Well, here's the interesting thing. The other lawsuits, there are other lawsuits besides ours, and they were in the city, and they got dismissed because they had included challenges to the original ETPA. We were very careful. We did not challenge ETPA. It's been in existence, you know, forever as far as we're concerned. We just challenged the HSTPA and the provisions, you know, and the constitutional bases for that. And so our suit is still alive. The judge has not made a decision, and we don't know whether he's going to dismiss it or whether it will go forward in another way or whether he'll uphold all or part of our arguments. We don't know. It's hard to have a time frame. You can't call up the judge and say, listen, when are you going to get to this?
So, right.
We're waiting. We're waiting. And we anticipate that he's going to, you know, everything was submitted a long time ago. So we're hoping that he'll decide. We're hoping that he'll decide in our favor. And we're hoping that if he doesn't decide in our favor, that we can get the Court of Appeals and maybe even the Supreme Court to hear us if we don't get any good result.
The lawsuit has not yet been dismissed. Does that provide reason for optimism for members of the building and realty industry? I know there's no way of answering the question, but you can't help but hope, correct?
Correct. Hope springs eternal, Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we've got about a minute remaining. Dorothy, what are the best ways to reach Finger and Finger, a professional corporation?
Well, you can contact any of us with our first name. So I would be Dorothy at fingerandfinger.com, all written out. And it could be Ken, Paul, or Daniel, depending on the question or who's available. Or calling the office.
Dorothy, I'm sorry, we're losing you. I'll just say you can reach Finger and Finger at 914-949-0308. Listeners, thank you for listening to Building Knowledge this morning. Join us next Friday at 11:30 a.m. here on 1460 WVOX for another segment of our program. This is Jeff Hanley saying enjoy your Friday, enjoy your weekend, stay safe, stay well.
AM 1460 WVOX, New Rochelle.